Chen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and let me also thank the UN and the government of Switzerland for organizing this event. The panel asks how the push and pull factors interact, and the short of the answer is we don't know it well enough. If you look at the profile of the authors of the Paris and Brussels attacks recently in Europe, I think that illustrates the difficulty to generalize. We know that they were, on the whole, mostly Europeans, that they were young, and that in the majority they had a criminal record. But we must be very careful, and I think the point was made extremely well by Mr. Robinson just before me, not to draw conclusions as to social, economic backgrounds leading or not to violent extremism. We must also remember that drivers of violent extremism are context-specific. The impact of terrorist attacks is also different, as is local resilience to terrorism. When we think about the impact, we must consider the effect that terrorism has on social cohesion, including how they stoke sectarian rivalries, but also how they affect children and entire population. So there are no quick solutions. Violent extremism is rooted in local and very specific circumstances, while often at the same time being influenced by global drivers and being amplified through social media. The first point, therefore, is that more research is needed, including gathering more statistical and empirical data, and this is an area in which the EU is heavily investing, including through the Hadaya Center. The fundamental question is, what drives individuals to commit the worst kinds of atrocities and to go as far as committing suicide in the name of ideas? We know from other research areas, including the World Development Report of 2011, that people aspire to security, they aspire to justice, and they aspire to dignity through the social opportunities that are provided by full employment. So if we want to understand drivers of extremism, we need to understand what makes people feel excluded, humiliated, or deprived of opportunities. But we must be careful, again, not to overgeneralize. Exclusion alone does not lead to extremism. We must understand also the role of ideologies and other personal circumstances, including psychological, and we must better understand the ways in which religion can be misused and manipulated. The Secretary General's plan of action makes an important contribution to the debate and spells out very well those push and pull factors. So I'll not go over them, particularly in view of time constraints, but I would like to just emphasize, based on the EU lessons, a few key messages. First, we need to ensure that people can go about their lives securely. I will not go into the implications of this point because it falls beyond the remit of this panel, but it is important to recall that we need to address both security and drivers of extremism. They are two sides of the same coin. But in that respect, I just want to note that it's critical that the provision of security is done in conformity with the law, respecting human rights, and in a manner that does not contribute to increasing the sense of exclusion that some communities experience. Evidence shows that abuses by security forces is one of the most powerful drivers of extremism. Second, we need to understand how our societies can better meet the aspirations of their people, in particular the youth. Data shows the majority of perpetrators of recent terrorist attacks in Europe were between 17 and 27. In the words of the action plan, how can we harness the idealism, creativity, and energy of youth and others who feel disenfranchised? We must also work with women as key pillars of society. And in short, it's essential that we focus on better integrating minorities, including immigrants. Here, I also want to note the reference in the action plan to the need for rehabilitation and counseling program, including for children. We also need to ensure that we take action to prevent the spread of extremist content through social media. Third, it is key to find political solutions to the conflicts in the world that underpin much of the violent extremism that we have witnessed. This also means ensuring that the international community comes together behind this objective, and that states refrain from supporting warfare through proxy extremist groups. Finally, I'd like to express a word of caution and to talk not only about what we need to do, but also about how we should do it. While we must strive to adopt a comprehensive approach, we must also refrain from rehatting all forms of interventions and development support as preventing violent extremism. Action needs to focus on those factors that we can influence. Labeling legitimate development programs systematically as PVE can be counterproductive. We must ensure that, of course, we strive to achieve open, equitable, inclusive, and pluralistic societies, but at the same time, we need to recognize that actions need to be targeted and to focus on the drivers that we can influence. We need to apply to PVE the do no harm approach that is similar to those working in, that is familiar to those working on conflict prevention, and that means ensuring that actions do not have unintended negative impact. Let me conclude by saying that the EU is committed to engaging with the UN, all international and regional partners, and civil society to strengthen our collective analysis of violent extremism and to step up our actions to tackle the drivers of conflict and to prevent the spread of violent extremism. Thank you very much.